Welcome to the Marshall Pruitt Podcast, presented by Cooper Tires. Our guest this episode, our old friend Alex Zanardi, one of our very first guests on the good old Marshall Pruitt Podcast. We launched back in May of 2016, part of our somewhat new series, roughly titled Catching Up With. Why? Well, it's been a little over a year, I believe, since Alex and I had a chance to just get current on all in his world, with Alex coming to the United States here in January for both the Roar Before the 24 preparation for the big race, and then back for the Rolex 24 at Daytona with the BMW RLL team. Figured it was a great opportunity to catch up with Alex before that, namely to start off speaking about the new controls that he will be using inside the team's M8 GTE. In the past, what he's used is a combination of traditional foot pedals, using his prosthetics to work those, and hand controls on the steering wheel plus the shifter. What he's going to have now is actually very, very cool in using only his hands to operate that car. So before, with the prosthetics, there was definite wear that would cause a lot of physical pain and damage. And knowing that he's going to be taking part in a 24-hour race with BMW Team RLL, I love the new direction that the controls are headed, something that he tried out to great effect in the DTM late in the year, where he charged from last to basically right up towards the front, giving people a hard time. So we start off with talking about the new controls Alex will use, speak a bit about Billy Munger, the Briton young man who unfortunately lost his legs in a crash and is also fighting back like mad, speak about Alex's desire to do the Rolex 24 compared to the 24 Hours of Le Mans. Both were on offer from BMW. He gave us very emphatic reasons for why he wanted to come do his 24-hour race in the U.S. instead of France, and caught up in just a couple other things. The passing of Mo Nunn, someone who was very big, very influential in his career when he came back to IndyCar. We lost dear Mo earlier this year, so altogether, just a great time catching up with Alex. His sense of humor is amazing. Everything that he's spoken about in terms of his physical preparedness, what he's doing differently now to get ready for strictly using his hands, all great stuff. Love him, love him, love him, and can't wait to get together in January and hopefully record some more for you. You know, you can get every episode of the Marshall Pruitt Podcast on iTunes, on Podbean, our host site, Google Play, Spotify, all kinds of great stuff, plus our Marshall Pruitt Podcast Facebook page. And with all that said, let's get going with our man, catching up with Alex Zanardi, brought to you by Cooper Tire.
Marshall, how are you?
I am excellent, my friend. How about you?
I was in the dishwasher, so you saved me.
You know,
I guess my wife will take over from where I left.
Well, I've made your lovely wife angry, first of all, I'm sure, but I also think, you know, folks just love to know that, yes, Olympic winner and this and that and all kind of champion this, and he still does the dishes. Come on, folks, there's a reality. You don't get the excuse just because you've been successful in your career.
It's my job every night, I have to say. She does the cooking and then I do the cleaning.
Well,
but anyway, I can't complain.
You are a responsible adult, if nothing else.
Everything's cool. You know, I'm very much looking forward to drive the car again, and next time we'll be in Daytona. So, yeah, I'm excited about it.
Well, I just thought that might be a fun place to start on a general catch-up. Our mutual friends at BMW sent me over some photos that they did explaining the new steering wheel and brake lever, basically a different system you'll be using than maybe what folks might have read about a few years ago, where you were still having to use your prosthetics to drive the car. So I just thought that might be an interesting place to start, Alex, about the new technology and the new way you're learning to drive and race BMWs.
Well, the first question is, I guess, is why, in the sense that you probably led to believe that there was something wrong in the set of controls I had until, I would say, this new experience that incidentally was launched with the DTM race I took part this year.
Yeah.
Those controls were really thought and realized for endurance racing, because in 2015 I took part to the 24 hours of Spa with Bruno Spengler and Timo Glock in the Works Z4, and that was a magnificent experience for me. I think I was fast for the course of the race. I was not the weak, let's say, link in the chain in my team, but I have to admit I was not in the position to put up with the same quantity of driving in comparison to my teammates.
Sure.
Because some physical issues. So at the end of that race, I had an opportunity to take a trip, a short trip to Munich, sat down with the engineers, and the question was, Alex, how can we make you a better endurance driver? Because if there is something we can do, we wanna develop it, and maybe we have another opportunity, you know, we can be better prepared. And I started, my answer was immediately, well, guys, we should really study a set of controls which would allow me to keep my prosthetic legs in the motorhome and jump into the car without them. Because of transpiration, basically, is the main problem. And so they, of course, they follow my instructions, because, of course, I have the problem. I have to direct the orchestra in telling them what I need. They developed this set of controls, which was first tested by able-bodied drivers early last year. And the reason was that if anything could go wrong, they would still have the comfort of, you know, using the normal pedals, whether, sure, of course, it would have not been an option for me. Of course, the feedback they received from the driver was, I don't know whether I'm going to be able to drive the entire distance of the race, because it's pretty hard physically to work this lever with your arm, but it seemed to be better than, all the drivers simply said, all the drivers who had the opportunity to test the car, they basically said, yeah, it's better than we thought it would be. So when I finally had a go on it, I was very, very pleased from the very beginning. The job was very well executed. Prior to that point, I only had the possibility to have a feel of it into a sort of a mock-up into the shop, in order to give the engineers the last input feedback to do the fine tuning, let's say, as far as positioning the levers, the controls on the wheel, and so on, and in the best possible configuration. And then I had the first go into an M6. This was the beginning of this year. Yes.
Yeah.
And then we knew that the next step would have been to test everything into the M8, as it was already been announced that I would have took part to the 2019 Rolex 24. But then, meanwhile, the opportunity to drive to the DTM arrived, and so basically we incidentally fit all that equipment into the M4 first, for me to drive in Misano. And it was cool for sure, because to test those instruments into a car where the job is to to squeeze every ounce of performance out of the car. If you want to be competitive in that field, is the name of the game. It's not like endurance racing where not only it's more the rhythm which will pay the dividend, but you're also competing among a very competitive group of drivers, but also with many cars who are driven by gentlemen, who are driven by, you know, I wouldn't call them amateurs because it sounds pretty not nice, but it's what it is. So, yeah, it's, I mean, a good half of that field is not as irresistible as it is in DTM racing, where, you know, the entire field very often is closed into less than a second. So, to cut a long story short, I was given this great opportunity to drive this real racing car, and which reminded me a lot to the Indy cars I used to drive for Chip back in the late 90s. Mm. And it was a great experience, and now it's time to, you know, to enter into a new one with this car.
So, Alex,
so basically, I spoke for an hour, not really answering the question why.
Brother, look, we know there's no short answers, and that's not what we call for. We don't call you when we're looking for three. You're not the Kimi Raikkonen, okay? We've got Kimi. We appreciate Alex for Alex. You know, the thing I wonder about, Alex, is obviously you have had to do a lot of upper body training, especially with your Olympic efforts and such. I'm curious if or how your training has changed, knowing that from a cockpit control standpoint, you won't be relying on traditional pedals that you would use with your legs, but it's now essentially all upper body with all performance functions, throttle shifting, downshifting, and now this brake lever where you need to apply leverage. Curious how you might be modifying your training routine so you look like Tony Kanaan with the upper body.
Well, I can't say it's incredibly easy, but it's not that difficult either. In reality, the DTM machine, in consideration of the amount of downforce that car produces, the power, the lightness of the car itself, it's by far more demanding race car from a physical point of view. And I was warned by all the personnel in BMW when I was offered to drive the car that they had probably to think of a different training procedure towards that commitment. And to the point where they got me a little concerned, in fact. But then I had the opportunity to drive the car in Vallelunga in Italy, near Rome,
yeah,
which is a very tough circuit from a physical point of view, with some medium to high speed turns where you really develop some G's as far as lateral forces and longitudinal also in the braking area, because the circuit has a lot of grip. But basically I was able to put together like 140 laps the first day and 160 plus on the second one.
They're trying to wear you
basically
out.
They won the car. Yeah, they thought they would wear me out, but I wore their engine out. Basically, they stumbled because they said, "We out of mileage with the engine." So they were too very, very surprised, because they had problems in the past where, you know, especially at the beginning of the season when they take some new drivers to test the car after 30 laps, they kind of raise the white flag. They say, "I'm done, I'm baked." And for me, in consideration of the fact that I haven't driven a race car for basically a long, long time, I too was expecting to feel it more than I did. These days, as far as my upper body, as far as my arms, it's not that I'm stronger. I am probably stronger than I've ever been. But the reality is that I am built now in a different way. And, you know, all the muscles of our upper body are basically white fiber. It means that you have very little blood reaching those muscles, because this is the way Mother Nature designed us. We need a lot of blood in our legs because we kind of use the legs to do everything, to move around. And that's why not only we need strength in our legs, but we need resistance in our legs. And it's like, you know, blood is what feeds our engines with oxygen and glycogen. And so if you do not have enough blood reaching the muscles, the engine, because the muscle at the end of the day is an engine, will stop, not because it's not sufficiently powerful, not because it doesn't have the capability to stay on and to keep delivering that amount of power, because the oxygen and glycogen that is reaching that muscle is completely insufficient to keep the muscle working, and so you stop. And this is a problem normally for people, whether not only because of my sporting activity, but for the life I live these days as a disabled man who turns into his bed in the night, not even waking up, you know, because that's the only thing I got. So everything I do through the course of my life, every day, I do it with my arms. And it means that by using these muscles so much, I have changed gradually the state of my muscle, turning my muscle into red fibers, because I probably have developed a vascular system that is completely different and is now similar to what every human being has in his legs. And this is why these days I'm capable of enduring a movement that anybody could do, but for a short amount of time, whether I can do it for like you know, hours, which is the reason why, you know, these days I can survive when I do an Ironman, for instance. You know, I stay engaged into that thing for like 8-9 hours, and all I have is my arms. So yeah, this is the reason why, not because I am Superman, not because I am incredibly strong, because you don't need to be incredibly strong, but you need to be incredibly resistant. And this is what I am today. In comparison to an able-bodied person, it's incredible the amount of extra resistance I have in comparison to an able body. If what I have to do, I have to do it with my arms.
Well, I know one of the things that we're looking forward to is getting you on track here at Daytona. I had someone read a tweet from someone yesterday that had me laughing. Basically, he was apologizing to Fernando Alonso, who was just announced, and apologized to Fernando, knowing that since you're going to be there, it'll be one of the rare opportunities where Fernando is not the most popular driver at a motor racing event. I'll joking aside with our friend Fernando, I'm guessing you're also looking forward to being there, because it's not just you, achieving another goal in your career, but there's also going to be some fantastic drivers from many disciplines turning out to this 24-hour endurance race just for pure passion. So just curious if you're looking forward to being there and having the Alonzos and Kobayashis and the American champions and you name it. Curious if you're going to look forward to that as well.
This goes on top of everything, but the main thing for me is to turn the engine on and take the circuit. You know, this is what I care about. This is the most important thing. And let me also add that for some reason, when I was competing in IndyCars, and I consider United States my home, up to the point where I felt a little bit American. I don't want to, sound too arrogant in saying this, but I felt very welcome in your country, not only by the fans, by the people surrounding me, but also in the opportunity I was given. And so, you know, in this situation, I kept hearing about some of my colleagues taking part to the Daytona 24, and that got me curious about this event. And I kind of promised to myself that down the road, if ever I would have the opportunity, that's the place where I would want to be. So last year, at the beginning of the season, actually, Jens Marquardt came to me and said, "Alex, you know, we're developing this new car, the new M8. We may have the possibility to get you into one of our team for 24 hours. Okay, it's probably now too early to say this, but if ever you would have the opportunity, would you prefer to compete in Daytona or Le Mans?" And he probably thought, with me being European, that I would answer with no doubt Le Mans. And I answered instead with no doubt Daytona.
Wow.
All the way, yes. In comparison, I mean, don't get me wrong, Le Mans is a great race, it has a great tradition and whatever. But quite frankly, it has no appeal on me. It has no charisma on me. It's a race where it's more a technical exercise among the engineers to the drivers the best car, because that's what you take to compete. Daytona, it's a completely different ball game. It's a field where you need to manage your skill, your driving, also very often into difficult situations of traffic. You're definitely very busy in turning the wheel many times. You don't have the brakes you get in Le Mans down the straight lines. So it's much more racing, let's say, than, in my view, than Le Mans would have been. So I had no doubt in my mind. I said, "Oh yes, absolutely, Daytona. This is the place where it would really be cool for me to be. Daytona would be an interesting offer. Le Mans would be an interesting offer. But if you say which one you prefer, no doubt, I want to go to Daytona." And so that was that. And then at the end of the year, we all went to the Christmas party, and he announced that he would have organized a team for me in 2019, which was nice, but it was also a surprise for me, a very nice one, and here we are.
Let me ask a couple other quick questions, Alex, before we go. Billy Monger posted a video of being able to climb out of the car in almost no time, being able to prove to the FIA that he meets all requirements, whether he wants to race Formula 3 or otherwise. I know you've only been incredibly supportive of that young man, but what do you see and feel as his career appears to be gaining more momentum, leading him towards bigger goals and dreams, knowing that he's trying to do the same thing that you've achieved, which is continue living your dream, but he's also turned into a very similar Zanardi-like inspiration to the world. What do you think of when you see this kid and what appears to be positive momentum going forward after a really tragic crash?
Well, I'm very happy for him, because I think to a certain degree I help in creating opportunities, not just for him, but also for other disabled drivers who wouldn't have had the same type of attitude from the ones who are capable of giving them an opportunity, because of a totally understandable skepticism when it's time to start the engine and let somebody with with a sudden disability, take the wheel and take your car around. It's inevitable. I remember when I went to get my license after my accident, normally you just go through a medical check and off you go, and that's it. They check your heart, your eyes, and that's all they want to know. Whether in my case, there was a commission of doctors, there was like 12 different specialists. They checked everything. Basically, they scanned me my head, and up to the point where I say, hey, guys, you know, I lost my legs in Germany. I didn't lose my head. Yeah, but we want to make sure that everything is okay. So basically, they were just searching for a good excuse to say, I'm sorry, Alex, we can't give you a waiver. You know, we got to stop you. Because everybody was so sure that that was an insane attempt, that I would have had an accident, that everybody would look at me as someone very, very vulnerable, someone who, if ever, would have another crash, would kill himself. Anybody could kill himself by having a crash. I'm not any more vulnerable than anyone else. Actually, I'm less vulnerable because I can't break either one of my legs, you know. So now everything is different. I remember the first spin, the first time I spun the car and stalled it in the gravel. A couple of fire trucks arrived, two ambulance, three assisting cars. I mean, every possible vehicle which was there just dramatically in no time reached my area to rescue me, and I just spun the car, you know. So that was kind of giving you the measure of the amount of awareness, the preoccupation, basically the fear around my, just my, around my presence, not to say about around me, you know, doing this or that. But then gradually the perception changed to the point where I finally ended up winning my very first race against professional race car drivers. And then something magic happened where if I would only qualify 10th on the grid, the journalist would simply ask me, what was wrong with you today? Was not like, wow, Alex, what you're doing, it's so magic.
Wow. But
just because I was able to turn the engine on and leave the garage, if you understand
what I'm saying. Yeah.
So I was less an example for others. I was less an amazing story, but I got back to be rather a driver who was able to induce people to have expectation on me. And now, the good thing for a guy like Billy is that he doesn't have to go through all that skepticism, because my personal story, I guess, helped him and other people. Take Frederic Saucet, for instance. He drove in Le Mans, and he's a quad amputee. He has no feet and no arms. So I think 10 years ago, or when I was driving WTCC, I think the FIA wouldn't have even considered studying his case to let him, you know, drive a car. They would have said, no, forget about it. We don't want to know about this, you know. And now they study the case. They said, yeah, I think the solutions you found are pretty good. So going to give you green light, and it was as simple as that. So to cut a long story short, I think Billy, it's much easier for Billy now to do what he wants, technically speaking. The bad side of the coin, which actually I think it's probably even better side of the coin, if you are a real sportsman, is that now, you know, it's gonna go on and move forward in his career only if he performs, only if he does the job, only if he's fast and and this is what people want to see out of him. And I think the kid is not an idiot because he's won some races, so he knows how to steer the wheel and how to push the pedal, whether he does it with his with the feet that his mom made or via some prosthetical aids, you know. So, of course, I'm emotionally speaking, I'm very close to him, and I certainly wish him a lot of success, but now I think it's down to him to perform, because we talk about Alonso. Alonso is an exceptional driver, and he's not exceptional driver because he's got all the bits that Mother Nature gives you in the first place. I've been a decent driver in my life through the course of my racing career, good enough to win races whenever I had the right equipment, and I believe that the main obstacle these days is more down to my age than with my disability. I came to terms with that, and I think BMW has been very, very supportive in creating some controls which are beautifully designed and beautifully executed. And with this new set of controls, I'm sure that I'm going to be able not just to be sufficiently fast to support my team, but also I will have no problems to take my share of driving. And as long as they want me into the car, I will say I'm here, you know. If they want me to double stint or even to do a triple stint, it's no problems.
Amen. Let me ask one or two more quick things, Alex. We obviously lost our dear friend and mutual friend, Morris Nunn, earlier this year. And you and I haven't had a chance to speak since we lost Mo. But I was curious if you might be able to share either a fun or funny or interesting story that comes to mind from your time working with him, either as your engineer at Ganassi or as your team owner. Just something that might come to mind that shares some of the humanity or what made him unique.
Well, where do I start? For me, Morris was, I can't say a father, because of course he didn't want to be my father. He wanted just to be mainly my race engineer, my partner in business, and a friend. And he was inevitably a friend. And we had so much fun together. We were so complementary. We were so like black and white to some degree, but kind of fitting one into the other perfectly, because I was always pushing him. He was kind of always slowing me down in many different ways. I remember many times me wanted to test something new, something that we had never investigated, technically speaking, as far as the setup of the car. In particular, one time we were in Nazareth and I wanted to change the rear toe. I wanted to go with a little bit of toe out in the rear to get rid of that push that was stopping me to go faster. And he said, no, Alex, we gotta try something else. He said, come on, Morris, let me try. No, we gotta let... Come on, Morris. And at one point he said, hey, Pineapple, shut up. I told you I'm not gonna give you any fucking toe out in the rear. And he said, but why wouldn't you? And then he turned around with a big smile and he said, because I like my Italian friend. And when I see him going around, after 20 seconds, I want to see him going around again. I don't want him to stop up against some walls, you know? Yeah. He was funny, and he was a real racer. I remember another day we were in the shop in Indianapolis, and that to describe my typical day in that year. I mean, I would always find an excuse to go to the shop and just spend some time around my car, moving my seat, moving my steering wheel, talking to the boys, and then inevitably sitting in front of Morris Tech up to the point where he would say, come on, Pineapple, you go home. I'll call you when I get home. And then as soon as he would get home, he would call me, indeed, and he would say, I'm here. So I would jump on my jet ski and cross the river, the lake, and fix him a cappuccino. And then we would again continue our conversation in his deck. And I think that magic relationship I had with Morris was like very, very important in the construction of the success we had as a team. Because in reality, I was just an element. I was just a very important element, I want to believe. But the team that Chip had placed together was just fantastic from many point of views. But then you got to have something unexpected to happen, like the relationship that I had with Mo and then he had with me, where we would never get tired in talking about the car, in discussing, in searching and investigating. We may well be in pole position with a big gap going towards the race, and until the very last second still talking about how the hell we can make this car go faster. Because until you have to check the throttle for a corner and you cannot stay wide open, it means that the car has a problem, that the car is improvable. So we were always trying to improve the car. But then what I really enjoyed, I heard him once, because he would never say this in front of me. He was indeed like a good dad, that he didn't want to spoil his son, So one time I just spotted him talking to Chip because we were in Cleveland. I had a problem with the quick shift system that did not enable me to use the system. Therefore, I have to lift the throttle with my foot at every shift. This theoretically may could make you lose performance, right?
Oh, yeah.
I mean, at the end of the day, these smart engineers, they study and they develop the system for a reason. But that was and I lost the system basically on lap 3, so I drove the entire race without it. But that was the race, if you remember, in 97, where I ended up being last, and I recovered.
I know.
27,
no one forgets that.
Places.
No one will forget that race.
Top 18 fastest lap of the race, and so on. And I heard him talking to Chip and say, you see where this guy is incredible, that until the very last minute, he's on me talking about how bad the car is. He always wants to change the car because he's never satisfied with the car. And then the race goes, and you could send him out with only 3 wheels, and he would still adjust and probably drive it as fast, because then he knows when he's in trouble how to go around the problem. And I felt so proud that night. I remember I could not sleep that night because I kept thinking, his words kept echoing in my head, and I was so proud of him saying this. But I mean, I could talk for like 1 week nonstop, and well, yes, I miss him a lot.
Well, let's do this, Alex. I've got all, I mean, I could, you and I could talk all day long about all kinds of things. Our old pal and mutual friend Jimmy Vassar says to say hello as usual. He said to ask you about, tell the story about your cool down lap after winning the title at Laguna in 97 and then the partying that night afterwards. But I'm going to save that. Maybe some questions about your debut with Jordan and stuff. Why don't we save some of that, and hopefully we can find some time either at the Roar before the 24 or the Rolex 24. Hopefully we can sit down there and just catch up some more and tell some more stories. But as always, brother, thank you for taking some time. You know that Everybody just loves checking in with you, so you know I appreciate it when you make time for me.
Marshall, it's been a pleasure, and if worse comes to worse, we can fill the dead time through the course of the race, because I'm sure I won't get much sleep even when I'm not driving.
Storytelling with Uncle Alex during the Rolex 24. That sounds like fun. Well, apologize to the dear Mrs. Zanardi for having me take you away from dish duty, but I'll look forward to seeing you here in Daytona, brother, in about 6 weeks or so.
All right, man. Thanks.
Can't wait to get to Daytona, where not only we will have our man, Mr. Zanardi, but we will also have his dear friend and former Chip Ganassi Racing teammate, Jimmy Vassar, who is a co-entrant of a brand new IMSA program. So we will have both Jimmy in the paddock, we'll have Alex in the paddock, and if I can grab our man, Mike Hull, modern day managing director of the program, but back then, more team manager-ish role, but get Mike Hull, Zanardi, and Vassarin together in a room, and that just sounds like a lot of fun. Hopefully I won't have to bleep too much. And yeah, those guys, I'm telling you, just gifts. Just true gifts in the sense that they've done so much already. They've got so many stories to tell, and most of what we do here in the little old podcast is just try and tell fun stories and or amuse ourselves, make the workday go by a little bit quicker, or your run, your jog, your whatever it might be. So, and also thanks to those who sent in a few questions that I was able to pose to Alex for this episode. And if you have more that come to mind for the next time I sit down with our man from Italy, let me know. And I'm sure the good old Pineapple will certainly enjoy answering those. All right, I'm Marshall Pruitt. This is the Marshall Pruitt Podcast presented by Cooper Tires. Thank you for listening.